with air travel and investigates the humor of the subject with the help of Alfred Marx.
Two girls, back from their holidays, met at the office, and one said to the other, "My word, you look very brown. Where did you go?" First one said, "I don't know, we flew there." Frank, do you know how to recognize Irishmen at airports?
No, how do you recognize Irishmen at airports?
Well, they're the ones who throw bread to the helicopters. You know, there are lots of problems with supersonic air flights. They haven't really ironed out yet. I mean, when you're going faster than sound, you can't hear what anyone says to you until you catch up with the words. Now, there was a case on Concorde recently where a bloke said to an air hostess, "Could I..." And by the time she'd heard him, he had. This cinema usherette decided to leave her job, become an air hostess, and on her first trip to New York, 35,000 feet above the Atlantic, when the in-flight film had finished, she opened all the exit doors.
"British Caledonian flight BR-279 will leave for Delhi at 17:30 hours. Pan American flight for Los Angeles will leave at 17:40 hours. The Aer Lingus flight to Dublin will leave when Mickey Mouse's little hand is on 8 and the big hand is on 12.
A jet fighter went out of control and the pilot bailed out over the Pacific. He lost consciousness, and when he came round, he found his head was cradled in the lap of a beautiful native girl on this exotic island. She looked at him. He opened his eyes. She said, "Oh, you are well." And he said, "Oh, my word, yes." And she says, "What does my brave hero from the Silver Bird require?" "Water," he said feebly. He must have been thirsty. And she went into the jungle, brought him back cool spring water in a coconut shell. He drank it gratefully, and then she said, "And what does my brave hero from the Silver Bird require now?" "Food," he said. Oh, she returned with a roasted boar and fruit and wine. The pilot ate it all up and fell into a deep sleep. When he woke, the girl was still there, and there he was, cradled in her arms. "Now," she said, "my brave hero from the Silver Bird has eaten and rested. Your strength has returned." And she looked at him seductively and said, "Now, I suppose you would like to play the game that all men want to play." He said, "Blimey, don't tell me you've got a dartboard on the island."
Air travel is one of the great technological revolutions of the 20th century. In the words of Antoine de Saint-Exupéry,
"The aeroplane has unveiled for us the true face of the earth."
But despite the wonders of the new technology and the name Antoine de Saint-Exupéry, not everyone welcomed the prospect of man in flight. Henry David Thoreau:
"Thank God men cannot as yet fly and lay waste the sky as well as the earth."
Philip Wiley thought there were other more pressing priorities.
"We're about to enter the age of flight before we've even developed a chair that a man can sit on comfortably."
"And now we can fly, airlines still haven't developed a chair that a man can sit on." "Or women, for that matter, over the height of 5'2". It gives a new meaning to the song, "Knees Up, Mother Brown." Even though it's now becoming commonplace, air travel remains a profoundly exciting experience. The excitement has been well described by Alexander Chase.
"Lovers of air travel find it exhilarating to hang poised between the illusion of immortality and the fact of death."
The element of danger is certainly a big part of the thrill. Winston Churchill:
The air is an extremely dangerous mistress. Once under the spell, most lovers are faithful to the end, which is not always old age."
Well, certainly death and the threat of death are the mainsprings of much of the humor about air travel. I suppose it's another manifestation of the old fact that we laugh at what we're afraid of. Mind you, very few of us would actually say aloud what it is that we are afraid of.
"You know, airplanes, you know, all comics do routines on airplanes, you know, and they talk about fear and stuff like that, see. But none of them ever really come to the point, you see. And the point is this. I do not hold in what's on my mind. I, as soon as my foot hits the plane, I speak out.
Hope the plane don't crash.
Yes, sir. Speak right out. Sure, it shakes up a lot of people. But they're angry because they didn't say it. I got on one plane, I said, hope the plane don't crash. People said, hear, hear. And it was the pilot. I'm telling you right now, a lot of you get drunk, you just, oh, yeah. And then you say, we landed, always there again, sober right up. Okay, good enough. And I'll tell you something else. I want to know when the plane is going down. I don't want any stewardess walking by saying, oh, no smoking, just for fun. No, sir. I want to prepare myself for that crash. Guy, the worst thing in the world to do is die while you're reading Life magazine. I want to be able to do all those dumb things that I've been preparing and think. I want to put my arms out, brace myself, just in case, you know. Sure, my wrist may wind up in my shoulder joint. But I still might, you know, I want to wait until it's 6 inches from hitting and then jump up in the air. I want to do those things. I don't care if I get wiped out. And I want you to face reality, too. I've told my wife about this a million times. When that plane is going down, I am not thinking about my wife and daughters. I'm sorry. A lot of you may say, oh, that's bad. I'm saying to myself, why me?
Bill Cosby. The trouble with air travel is that it doesn't only involve sitting in aeroplanes. That's a very small part of the process. Other sorts of travel are involved. Neil McElroy.
In the space age, man will be able to go around the world in 2 hours. 1 hour for flying and the other to get to the airport.
Al Blake.
Aeroplanes aren't really fast and luxurious. It's just that anything would seem fast and luxurious after an hour in an airport bus.
Yes, the process of getting from your home to your seat in the plane is one long obstacle race.
I must say, it's rather marvelous when you think of it, isn't it? That, you know, if you want to go to New York, say, instead of just lying about for days on end, like in a sort of floating Selfridges, doing nothing, eating far too much, all you have to do is just jump on a plane 17 miles outside London at 2 o'clock in the morning. You can be in New York too late for breakfast and just in time to go to bed at noon. It doesn't take your physical body more than about a week to catch up with this. No, as the airlines say nowadays, you know, flying is very, very safe. It is actually, we can calculate it is safer to fly than it is to cross the road. Mind you, I gave that up years ago where I live, in Kensington, near the air terminal. They have these airline buses whizzing about, you know. I think the drivers have instructions to keep the statistics favorable. Companies do anything to put you at your ease, whether it is our own BO Airways Corporation or Air Linctus or any of those, right? Right from the moment when they send you your ticket, often as much as 6 hours before you're due to leave. And it says on it that you are entitled to 20 kilos of free baggage. There's a wonderful international ring about it, kilos, you know. You can always get down your log rules and slide tables and find out that this is, in fact, about 44 pounds, give or take an oz. I always like to weigh everything before I go, and I on my scales. They only weigh up to 10 pounds. They're marked in scruples. But I weigh everything, including the cases, and it usually comes to about 40 pounds. Put the things into the cases... 50 pounds. Can you explain? It's the only example where the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. Anyway, off to the airport. Off to the airport, and you know you're nearly there because you see this big notice saying, beware low-flying aircraft. There's not a lot you can do about that. Take your hat off. Then you go in. Go into the lounge and you sit down and the man comes up and tells you that you are on the advanced flight, which sounds marvelous. Until you find out it means you've got to wait for another 4 hours. There's always a good reason for this. Either the plane has been held up in Beirut by some band of marauding riffs, or there's a wind over the Atlantic, something they haven't quite tumbled to yet. What they do on the air ministry roof, I do not know. Or... Or else it's an untraced electrical fault, which means they can't find the radio operator. You sit there. You go on waiting there, you know, if you haven't had smallpox. And filling in your landing card next door to this big machine saying, insure your life for £250, you know. Loss of both limbs, half price. Until finally you hear a voice through the loudspeaker saying, well, if I have to upset the doctor, Mr. Alistair. So you do that. It's all aboard the mystery bus tour, and off we go to the middle of the field. Well, you go in and you find your seat and you sit down and you stop smoking and you fasten your safety belt. And you take your hand baggage out of the hand baggage rack and put it on the floor. They're very particular about this. And then a very nice lady comes and tells you what to do when you come down in the water. And what to do when you stop breathing. And finally it's time to go. And it chocks away and they start up the engines. You know, shh. And the whole plane starts to shake. Like this. It's like a cat after a pigeon, you know. But I'm never worried because I know that every tiny part of this great machine is a miracle of modern engineering. Then the ashtray falls off.
Oh. Michael Flanders. Air travel is organized and controlled by airlines which, on the whole, are pretty efficient. It can't be an easy job dovetailing all those highly complex schedules and satisfying the booking demands of millions of passengers. Here are a few extracts from letters reputed to have been sent to airline booking offices. First to one in New Jersey.
Dear sir, we are four couples planning a joint honeymoon for 2 weeks. Please send me descriptive literature.
Not through the U.S. mails. Get you for that. One from Nebraska.
Dear sir, please can I book 2 seats on any flight going anywhere that's showing Gone with the Wind as an in-flight movie?
And Nearer Home from Heathrow.
Dear sir, I understand that next Monday's flight to Rome is fully booked, but would like a seat with a good view if anyone drops out.
Mind you, the airlines do sometimes slip up on the way they sell themselves. The good airline slogans stay in the mind, but some of the less effective ones are quickly forgotten. Ones like this.
Discover the Far East convenience. Fly Cathay Pacific.
Nasty thought. And here's another.
Come to the fun airline and let us take you for a ride.
And finally.
On our airline, the planes come first. But the passengers run a close second.
Airlines vie with each other fiercely in their advertisements, each one trying to bring you greater comfort, greater speed, or a more attractive package tour.
Hello, holiday makers. Here we are with the holiday offer of a lifetime. With Belsons, you have wined and dined on Mulligan stew and enjoyed 7 windlash days in Albuquerque. You've enjoyed our colourful holidays on the Costa del Living. Last year, you spent 78 days at sea in an open sampan under a Liberian flag of convenience due to a cock-up at head office. But now, we proudly present 14 days at Gatwick. Relax in Gatwick's delightful lounges. It's seating, it's gay muzak, it's announcements. Spend happy hours waiting for drinks at one of the many enchanting bars. Lose that oh-so-tiresome luggage and enjoy the holiday of a lifetime.
It was a wonderful holiday. One could lie on one's bench and see the world go by, and one was always bumping into people, always.
The food was outstanding. So often abroad, one is served with foreign food, and unless armed with a box or two of the traveller's friend, can easily come unstuck. When one asks for a hot dog here, one gets a hot dog. And not Jack Russell Vindaloo, open the window and run for the loo. It is a quip.
I shall never forget the many exciting walks. Some evenings, Ben and I would stroll along the promenade and look at gate 8. Or sometimes, if the mood was upon us, gate 9. On one occasion, we took a guided tour to gate 26 and saw the whitening bones of some poor travellers who had lost themselves looking for flight 2063 to Menorca. My word, not the ruins of gate 37 rich in legend.
Yes, get that high octane down your lungs. Book now for 14 days at Gatwick. Many stay longer.
That was William Rushton. In spite of the inconveniences of modern air travel, one must not forget the great technological achievement that the aeroplane represents. The desire to be able to fly is as old as mankind. One can trace its development from the legendary Icarus through Leonardo da Vinci to the Wright brothers and other pioneers of this century. But not everyone thought it was a good idea. A couple of centuries ago, William Law said,
"What can you conceive more silly and extravagant than to suppose a man racking his brains and studying night and day how to fly?"
Fortunately, others were more optimistic of man's chances. In the last century, Samuel Butler said,
"Whatever any other organism has been able to do, man should surely be able to do also, though he may go a different way about it."
And man's technological genius did contrive quite a few different ways to go about it. Enormous advances were made, like this one reported in a Sunday newspaper.
30,000 feet is a great height for aircraft. 40,000 feet, to which it is said the Messerschmitt 109F can get, is greater.
True. Now the technology is so advanced that space travel is no longer just a science fiction dream. That, like all advances in flying, was frowned on in its infancy. The Times printed this note of caution.
"Let it be said that even under the best conditions, any trip outside the Earth's atmosphere must be reckoned an extremely hazardous undertaking."
Thank heavens the Times pointed that out. The Daily Express was more worried about the moral implications.
"Russia is planning to send a man and a woman into space together, and they may not be married."
While the Glasgow Herald, a more practical paper, printed this very useful suggestion from a reader.
"In view of the great expense and difficulty involved in firing rockets at the moon, I suggest that future attempts should be made when the moon is full." There would be a better chance of hitting this larger target.
As space travel has become almost commonplace, so has supersonic travel. And it won't be long before there's travel beyond the speed of light. Must be a word for that. Superluminary. Supersonic. Well, anyway, here's an anonymous limerick.
"There was a young lady named Bright who travelled much faster than light. She started one day in the relative way and returned on the previous night."
There is one comfort that patriots can find in the development of air travel, and that is that at least some of the pioneering work has been British.
"Hello. Well, first of all, in today's programme, let's look at the most fantastic, astounding and amazing British advance of recent years. Yes, it's the hovercraft."
Hooray!
Again.
Hooray!
"Since this fantastic, astounding and amazing breakthrough several years ago, the hovercraft has progressed by leaps and bounds, which is why it's so unpleasant to ride in." "The principle of the hovercraft is quite simple and can be illustrated by a simple analogy. When you throw a stone into a bucket of water, the ripples spread outwards. Or, to put it another way, when you throw a hovercraft into a bucket of water, the ripples spread outwards. Or, to put it another way, inwards. Recently, fantastic, astounding and amazing British research has been going on to develop a hovercraft small enough to be thrown into a bucket of water."
David Hatch and John Cleese. Apart from the nuisance to the passengers, air travel also creates problems for those of us left on the ground. For a start, there's the problem of privacy. With all kinds of unsuitable people up in the air, isn't there a danger of their prying on the earthbound? Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Alfred Marx will now recite a poem by Hilaire Belloc entitled Lord Hybo.
"Lord Hybo, getting tired of trains, would binge about in aeroplanes, a habit which would not have got him into trouble had he not neglected what we know to be the rule of common courtesy. Past bedroom windows he would sail, and with a most offensive hail, disturb the privacy of those about to wash or change their clothes."
Mrs. Whitehouse has got a motion coming against this. Another constant complaint of ground users against air users is that of noise. Of course, there's no way around that. Aeroplanes do make a lot of noise, and the faster the plane, the noisier it tends to be. Many of the complaints from the environmental lobby against Concorde are based on noise. But there's always someone ready with a helpful suggestion for problems like sonic booms. A letter published in the South Wales Evening Post.
"A simple solution to this dilemma would be for those who live in areas affected by these booms to wear earmuffs. The cost of this measure would be trivial compared with the profits that we as a nation will make from the sale and operation of Concorde.
These earmuffs could be manufactured in a variety of attractive colors and could be issued free under the National Health Service, as are spectacles at present.
You can just imagine it, can't you? You can take your earmuffs off now, Bloodwin. What? It's a pity that the worries of the environmentalists are not dealt with like the worries of aeroplane passengers, because inside the plane there's always the establishment figure of the pilot, that avuncular, omniscient presence who will provide constant reassurance over the tannoy. Helpful messages like this one.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is your captain speaking. I'm delighted to report that we haven't, as we feared, got a bomb on board. At least, if we have, we haven't found it.
Here's another reassuring message from Captain Shelley Berman.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is your pilot, Captain Holbrook. I just want to welcome you all aboard Flight 714, nonstop to Los Angeles. We'll be cruising at an altitude of approximately ...20,000 feet or so. We picked up a tailwind, so of course we'll be traveling approximately 350 miles per hour. And we should land 20 minutes ahead of schedule. Now, that scares the hell out of me, too, you know. I mean, we can land an hour ahead of schedule if he puts it down in Grand Canyon, you see.
Shelley Berman. The captain of an aeroplane is the one who's always blamed in the event of disaster. And sometimes this isn't completely fair. A little verse by Darrell Catling.
Don't blame the pilot. He was only semi-conscious at the time.
But the captain isn't the only member of staff on a plane, of course. There are also the stewards, and perhaps even more important, those repositories of erotic fantasy, the stewardesses or air hostesses. Their life is not an easy one. For a start, their uniforms keep changing to try to catch up with passing fashion. A letter from the Bristol Evening Post.
So the air girls are ordered to shorten their skirts by 3 inches. Any of them who are not trade unionists may not know that this constitutes an alteration in their conditions of service. Due notice must be given of any such alteration.
It can't be much fun, can it, being constantly at the beck and call, not only of fashion, but also of a crowd of leering middle-aged executives away from their wives for a few days. A sad business. Let's hear an epitaph on an air hostess.
Here lies a girl whose duties were, before death's pilot summoned her, sidling up and down the aisle with plastic trays and plastic smile and serving with each plastic meal her plastic package sex appeal. But now her final flight's begun, her eternal seatbelt is undone, and as her drinks were, so is she, now forever duty-free.
Long applause for that one. The air hostesses, of course, are there, like all the airline staff, to build up the confidence of the passengers. After all, as I said at the beginning of the program, deep down, most people are terrified of flying. So let's hear another confidence-inspiring captain's message, this time on a charter airline. None other than the Mrs. Grace L. Ferguson Airline and Storm Door Company.
You're the navigator. You ought to be able to figure out where the hell we are. Good evening. I'd like to welcome you aboard the Mrs. Grace L. Ferguson Airline and Storm Door Company. I don't know how much you know about our airlines. We've only been in business about a week. Our airline was founded on the philosophy that what the American public was really looking for was a low-cost overseas transportation. We have attempted to eliminate what we call in the airline business frills and extras, like maintenance and and radar and a whole bunch of technical instruments up in the Roy, have you ever had one that hangs on for about 4 or 5 days? I don't mind the headaches too much, but it's that damn double vision that just... incidentally, I want to apologize for your having to stand all the way. If I can give you a little tip there, every half hour or so, you want to alternate your arms through those straps above your head. You folks flying tourists, you don't have any straps. So don't bother looking for them. Well, we're going to have a little drill in a few moments by our two stewardesses, Trixie and Bubbles. Well, I'm sorry, Miss Watson and Miss Savage. And they'll show you how to put your life jackets on. There really isn't that much to it, but a lot of people get them on backwards. And, well, that way you're going to wind up with your face in the water. If we should have to ditch, you'll receive plenty of warning because our co-pilot becomes hysterical. And he'll start running up and down the aisles, yelling, we're going to crash or something like that. Actually, he gets kind of panicky, and it isn't always too easy to understand him. At least it hasn't been in the past, anyway. So if you see him running up and down the aisles, and you can't make out what he's saying, you might slip into your life jackets. Be on the safe side. I'd like to answer some questions that you may have about the airline. It's the woman right here. Ma'am, if I may, I'll repeat the question so everyone can hear it. If we should ditch, how long would the plane remain afloat? Was that your question, ma'am? golly, that's awful hard to say, ma'am. Some of them go down like a rock. You know? And then I don't know, for some reason or other, others will stay up for 2-3 minutes.
Bob Newhart. For those of you who've been listening to this program on their car radio on the way to the airport, we hope we've restored your confidence in flying. And here's a final comforting thought from Shelley Berman.
Flying is still the safest way to fly.
Next week, we'll be back again looking at the humor of consumer affairs. Until then, chocks away.
Contact.
Trackmere goes into air travel was produced by Simon Brett.